Hey, everybody. I'm Jane.
And I'm Sarah.
And you're listening to the Medium Curious Podcast, the show that's bringing true wisdom of mediumship into this crazy ship of mediums.
Yes. Today we have on Lauren Robertson, who's the author of The Medium in Manolos. And we just have an amazing conversation with her where she shares her wisdom and her inspiration with us. So yeah, are you ready to get into it, Jane?
I just want to say that when we talked about this season and saying that we were like bowled over by who was coming on, this was one of the many guests, but this guest is,
yeah.
This is, I like squealed when I saw the email that she was coming on. So anyway, with great honor and joy, we bring you
the Lauren Robertson.
Woohoo! Hi, Miss Lauren. Thank you so much for joining us on Medium Curious. We're so happy to have you.
So happy. So excited. We were just talking about your book because I've now read it twice. And I know Jane's read it several times.
I have.
I know. I feel like we know you because of your book and we love you.
Oh, thank you. That's very sweet. I did pour a lot of myself into that book for sure.
You can tell.
Yeah. It rings so true, like every word. And it feels like such a massive support system.
Yeah.
Like I feel you loving other mediums through the book.
Yeah.
Thank you for saying that.
You're welcome. It's true. What were you about to tell us about your book? Do you mind sharing?
So when I saw your copy that has, it's like well-loved and well-worn and has lots of post-its and stuff in it, when I was manifesting my book deal with Hay House and I was journaling a lot about it, writing a lot about it, I used to write, fans of the book will have dog-eared, ugly copies that are torn, that are full of post-its, and they will workshop the book with their groups. And I had all of these little, you know, desires that I had for how the book would speak to the world. So seeing that and seeing how well loved your copy is makes me feel really great. It's literally the manifestation of my dreams. So thank you for showing me that.
Oh, I have my journal here that I've started keeping of my readings.
Nice.
Where you were like, you need to keep a journal of your successes. I was like, yes. Oh, okay. And I started that after reading your book. And it's
wonderful.
Also really helpful.
I still give that advice. I still teach mediumship courses now. And I actually give journals to my students for that exact purpose so that they can keep a journal of their successes and their wins. Because mediumship is so ephemeral and hard to grasp that it can be really easy to get into self-criticism and, maybe that wasn't that good. And maybe I could have just made that up or whatever. But if you write down what went well, you make it tangible, you make it real, you make it in black and white. And that's a really powerful feedback loop for being able to reread it and just have it empower you of look at how many pages of wins I have here. You know, look at how many miracles I've been able to participate in. And it can be really powerful for just stacking the successes in your mediumship because it's all to do with the energy that you feel you're in with your mediumship. So I still recommend that people who are developing their mediumship keep a journal of their successes for sure.
Oh,
yeah. I feel like I will always be in development. I mean, because like you said, I love how you said it. It's so like ephemeral. Like it's like a drive-by. You feel like I am capable. This is who I am. I do this. And then like, you know, you'll have just a few little misses and feel like dropped out, you know, like the bottom drops out. And it's very funny. So that I live in a home that has one of those like walls of mirrors over here. And I put a little sticky note that says, I am the medium. And then when I look that way, it's
nice.
Encouraging me. And my husband likes to sit here and tell me, I am the medium.
If he keeps saying that, stuff's going to start coming through. I'll tell you that.
I told him, yeah. His astrology says he is, so I'm waiting for that.
Yeah.
So let's see. I one of my favorite stories from the book, Lauren, is I don't know if it was your very first dem. Maybe it was the one where you were pretty scared and you had a spirit come through on the street. I was wondering for any listeners who haven't yet picked up and dog-eared their copy, if you would tell that story for our crew, because it's really special. And I think about it a lot for some reason.
Sure. So it was one of my early demonstrations, and it was specifically at a spiritualist church, which for some reason to me felt a lot more sacred, I guess. I mean, it's not really than, say, the pubs and things that I was doing before and the ladies' nights and whatever. It felt different. It felt a lot more sacred and I was quite scared. Yeah. And that day I had been shopping in the town that I lived in, trying to find something to wear to this dem so that I could show up and look really nice and really sharp. And I started to have this feeling of this man that was with me, and he was sort of narrating a little bit about his life. And it's the first time that I had ever had that happen or had my mediumship come through in that way. And so my first dem in a spiritual church was in that same town that I lived in as well. So when I got to the platform, I was literally so scared. I was in the toilet, like, thinking I had to poop. I was literally like, I was drinking water, so, and nothing was making my mouth not dry. I was literally so scared. I was terrified. So then I got up on the platform, and, you know, the prayer was done and you have to give a short address and stuff. And I was living in such terror in my own head that the only person and spirit that I could even feel or think of or anything was this man that had come to me earlier in the day with the little bits of evidence that was about his life. So I stood up, and it was all that was there. So it was all that I had to deliver. So I delivered these little bits of evidence about this gentleman and where I believed he lived and who he wanted to talk to and how he had died and under what circumstances. Yeah. And anybody who's ever done a public demonstration of mediumship will know that the first link that you give out, that moment of silence while people decide if it's for them and if it's real.
It's
and,
an eternity.
Yeah. Oh my goodness, it is like, and you're sweating standing up there and it's an eternity. So I was stood there for what felt like, I don't know, minutes, just waiting for, is this, I mean, what am I going to do if somebody doesn't take this link? Yeah. But fortunately, a hand went up at the back of the room because, you know, it was one of those links where you sort of describe the person in spirit as evidentially as you can, and you hope, in the absence of knowing directly who you want to go to, you hope that someone recognises it as their loved one. And it was the longest moment, and then somebody did recognise this gentleman that I was describing as their dad. And what I always found really interesting about that story is I feel it shows the intelligence of spirit, because spirit knew that I was going to be way too scared to be able to listen or hear anything that I needed to get that first link out the way. So they came to me when I was relaxed, when I was just shopping and I had my headphones in and I was not thinking about spirit or performing or doing a good job or putting myself under that pressure. I was just in the zone. You know, I was just sort of in that kind of alpha state that you go into when you're just kind of like browsing and shopping and living your life. And so he was able to get to me at that moment in a way that he knew he wasn't going to be able to when I was up there living in terror, basically, in front of people trying to do this dem. So yeah, so that sort of broke the seal. And then I find that that still happens to me a lot. It's not so much that spirit people come to me loads before a dem, but there is that feeling of like this one spirit person whose job it is to break the seal and to get me sort of in alignment with them collectively. Tends to be the strongest energy or the strongest personality that comes forward, and their job is to almost attune me, because I still get scared. I still get scared when I do public dems. Oh yeah, for sure. I still want to do a good job. I still feel the pressure of the grief that's in the room, you know, all of these things. So that sort of 18-year-old young woman and this almost 38-year-old, we still have that in common. So yes. Oh,
totally. And I just wanted to clarify and maybe back up a tiny bit for, I know we have listeners a lot in the States, but also around the world, which is really encouraging and exciting. So dems and demonstrations will make sense to a lot of people, especially in the UK. But here in the States, I just want to clarify, or maybe you can just explain. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's essentially...
It's a gallery reading.
Yeah. So, yeah, so
it's a public demonstration. A dem is short for a public demonstration of mediumship. Yeah. So it's a demonstration in front of an audience. Perfect. And so people will come either to a spiritualist church or to a specialist event or to a spiritual fair or something where perhaps there's a group reading going on. And the audience size for this type of reading can be anything from a really intimate group of, say, 10 people to hundreds and hundreds of people if you're a very famous medium, if you're doing theatres and that kind of thing. So we call them DEMs here in the UK, just as short for public demonstrations.
Perfect. Thank you.
And I think I've also heard them called platform here too.
Yeah.
So how many do you think you've done now? How many DEMs, big DEMs like have you done?
Let me see. So I've been doing a lot of my own events lately, just in the little space in between having my two babies. So I've been getting back to work. I've been hosting my own Spirit Sessions events here in Scotland. So recently I've had 3 or 4, and then out of about probably hundreds, thousands, I mean, I was working 5 nights a week for almost 20 years doing public demonstrations, whether they were spiritualist churches or psychic nights or psychic suppers or ladies' nights, for almost 20 years. So
we got to get working, Jane.
I know. I'm like, I can count on 2 hands how many times I've done it. So I need to get on it.
Yeah. So it's a lot. I mean, the number of one-to-ones are in the tens of thousands.
Wow.
And each of those one-to-ones have come from a public demonstration most of the time. So I guess you could divide it by 10 and probably that's how many it's been. So thousands probably.
Wow.
That's fast math. Nice.
That is. So,
especially for a pregnant lady.
Yeah, totally. The baby brain is real. It's real.
It sure is. Has your mediumship changed at all since you've had kids? Have you noticed any difference in the, I don't know, like how you connect with spirit or insights that you've gotten from spirit?
The one thing I do notice, and part of this is to do with motherhood and part of it is to do with things that were happening in my life concurrently to having my first child, is I have a keener awareness of grief and a keener awareness of the tenderness of people and the vulnerability of people and how we are all children and all grieving, really. I mean, everyone's a child and everyone is grieving, really. And so my mediumship has been shaped by that. I would always like to have thought of myself as a sensitive medium, you know, a medium who is aware of what ought to be said and what ought not to be said and, you know, what the wider context of the work is. But from having children, that has very much come into sharp relief for me, for sure. So when I pray, I always open with a prayer at my events. And when I pray, I definitely sincerely mean for the healing of the people that are there present. So, being a mum has definitely made me feel much more maternal, I guess, towards anyone in the spirit world or living that comes to me for a reading or to attend one of my DEMs, for sure.
Oh,
I love that. There's a medium who I follow here in the States who says that she falls in love with everyone that she reads for.
Yeah.
And that's been my experience. Is that your experience as well?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. It's a really precious, sacred opportunity. And I said to you earlier, Sarah, you know, when you're writing in your journal of wins, it's like you're getting to be like, I participated in a miracle. And you couldn't have done so were it not for the other participants who were present, the loved ones in spirit and the sitter. And so it's hard not to fall in love with them in that process and in that dynamic. And, you know, having people come to you with such open hearts and with such trust, there's a great responsibility that comes with that that definitely forges something, I would say, akin to love as well.
Absolutely. Aww. Oh, I love how you just said all that.
I know.
It is a big old soppy heart. it really just gets you. I mean, that's part in what's hard for me, because I do feel like that takes a lot of my energy. But I mean, I think when you do as many readings as you've done, like, how do you keep that up while being the hugely empathic person that you are?
That's a good question. And the answer is quite complicated, I think. And it may be the case that it's unique to each person. When people say that they find it tiring or, you know, kind of exhausting or draining, I actually don't think that it's the empathy that's causing that. I think that it's the trying.
Yeah. Mm. Huh.
because really good mediumship doesn't come from trying.
Yeah.
And it actually shouldn't come from your own resources of empathy or energy. And sometimes when we get into a state of worrying that we're not good enough, or we have to give more, or we have to say more, or the evidence needs to be better, or why isn't this going the way I want it to, you know, because of issues we have in our own past or our own life, that is where the draining part is. But having true empathy for someone and truly believing in the spirit world means that you must believe that ultimately they will be fine, and ultimately the spirit world will be fine, because by definition, we can't die for the life of us. And by definition, those that we've lost, we haven't said goodbye to forever. And so if you're truly sort of in that mode of, I'm just here to deliver that truth, I have no part in this other than to deliver that truth, then that feeling of I need to impress, or I need to try, or this needs to be better, or how can I empathize with this person more, or, you know, how can I come across as the medium that I want to be, all of that trying just kind of goes away, and it's not draining anymore. It's an allowing. It's, you know, mediumship is the art of allowing. Yeah. It's actually the art of taking yourself out of feeling like you have any role to play in making this be a special thing, and just instead allowing it to be what it is, and then the tiredness goes.
So the state of allowing, just letting it flow and getting the heck out of the way. You said something in there that I loved from your book about how we have this, our capacity to be a medium has everything to do with our ability, our, you know, sort of the clearing and the emotional states that our human has. So like, and this is actually what we read on we did a whole bit about your book, and we'll link that in the show notes in last season's episode. And it was a lot about that. It's like who we are as humans is going to directly affect how we medium. We've decided it's a verb, to medium.
Yeah.
Does that work for you?
I love that.
Just when you do some mediuming.
I'm mediuming. I'm doing it. I love it.
So I wonder if you can share a little bit more about that, or any stories that come to mind, because I was really touched by that whole section of your book. And, you know, I've always been in therapy, yada, 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 and doing all this soul searching self work, but I didn't know that probably it was in preparation for this job.
Yeah, so the skill of mediumship itself, I believe, is only a very small kernel, a very small central aspect of what it actually means or takes to be a good medium. And much of what it takes, if you have that very small kernel of interest or desire or openness to humanity, has to do with the qualities that would make you successful in anything else. And I wanted to say that in the book because I wanted to demystify it as something that is only open to some and not others, or that's this really sort of special gift or ability that, you know, 99.9% of people don't have. I don't actually think that that's true any more than it's true of playing the piano, for example. You know, so if you go through and you read that section of my book again, like what makes a great medium, what the qualities of a medium are, you could take out the word medium and enter the word guitarist or pianist or chef or, you know, artist or any other thing that you might want to be. And it's the same qualities, because it has more to do with your attitude towards your work than the work itself, than this constant question of, do I have this gift or don't I? Because mediumship is really one of the only, you know, abilities or creative interests where people are constantly questioning themselves about whether they have this gift or they don't. You know, an artist who lifts a paintbrush isn't questioning whether or not they can lift that paintbrush every single time they come to work on a canvas. And, you know, a musician isn't questioning whether they can pick up that guitar or put the fingers to their keys every single time. And yet mediums stop themselves at that gate, the starting gate, every time they sit down to do a reading, every time they sit down to do a meditation. And so I wanted to say, look, let's just get past that. You do have this kernel of an ability, And the way you're going to see it blossom into something is if you adopt these certain personality characteristics. And mm-hmm. rather than focus on, am I a medium or not, focus on cultivating these characteristics within yourself, and you're going to notice the positive impact in your mediumship. And it's from that that you'll then get the evidence that, yes, you can do this. So a lot of them do have to do with your emotional states and your attitude towards yourself. You know, enthusiasm, joy, being open to the transcendent, you know, having a sense of reverence, having a really strong desire to do this work, and being pulled by something within yourself and called to do it and heeding that call. And also just discipline and, you know, getting your butt down on your meditation mat and doing it, and getting your butt down at your desk and doing your 100 sittings that you need to sort of get a good feel for who you are as a medium, and just persevering with those things. And so, yeah, I really feel that most people have many of the overlapping qualities that would be necessary for them to develop some capacity for mediumship, like they could develop some capacity for the guitar or the piano.
That's beautiful.
And inspiring. I mean, yeah, you got to do the work, and you have to practice self-love, honestly. I mean, that was one of the main takeaways from when I was reading your book. It's really just the compassion that you were giving spirit and people, you were also turning on yourself as well. It's like, no, I have to be compassionate with myself too. Otherwise, none of it's going to work.
Yeah. It kind of breaks the flow if you're beating up on yourself. Spirits are like, whoa, that's awkward.
Totally, because it's out of alignment with spirit and the sitter. And so if you're the only one wrestling with your own internal self-doubt or whatever, when the sitter's willing and the spirit world's willing, then it just does no one any good.
Yeah.
You know, I always think about mediumship as three doors. So there's energy moving between these three doors. And so there's you as the medium have a door, and the sitter has a door, and the spirit communicator has a door. And each sitting or each link with spirit is completely unique, because it all has to do with how open or ajar or closed that door of energy is. And so you are only one of the three doors that energy is circulating through. Okay, so you're a valve or a door, like that energy is circulating through, but you're not in control of the sitter or the spirit person. The only energy door that you're in control of is your own. So your responsibility is just to make sure that that door is as open as it can be for this particular spirit person and this particular sitter. And so a lot of the work of not beating up on yourself is because that closes the door.
Right.
You know, it just becomes a self-obsessive. You know, I always say you can only focus on service or self. Pick one, because you don't get to focus on both. You don't get to focus on yourself and how you're doing and also be being of service. So it's like you have to choose where you're going to direct your attention and your energy. And that's what determines largely whether that door is open and receptive, or where it's kind of tight and ajar and, you know, wanting to close.
Wow. I'm loving that. I've had a similar kind of thought about, I saw it as sort of like, I'm ridiculous, but you've already sorted that, Lauren. Like three dancers. you know what I mean? But that relationship, and then like you're saying, the not control, but the, you know, I guess the control you have over your own door, meaning like all the work that you've done, not just while you sit down to a reading, but all of that, like self-forgiveness, like sitting with your little child, like all that just important hard work of humaning. And that leads to the ability to have that door be open. So it's all sort of yes. And that was one of my biggest takeaways too, Sarah, from the book, was this like really profound sense of responsibility. And it wasn't just to, you know, this particular small lane of, oh, here's a craft and here's a craft I'm developing. It's just like it opened the aperture. Like, whew, my responsibility is with the everything. And as a messenger, then I need to be aligned.
Yeah.
That's beautiful. So thank you so much for that. It's really gorgeous. It's gorgeous to hear you talk about it.
Yeah.
And the door wants to be open. It yeah. does. And it's are you going to allow the door to be open? Yeah. You know, it's you don't have to do anything to open the door. That's its natural state, especially if you are someone who's sort of open-hearted, open within yourself. The door to spirit wants to be open. It's how we understand the world in ways that are non-tangible. It wants to be open. It wants to serve in that way. But it's whether or not we are trying to yank it shut out of, you use the word control, you know, out of trying to control how we feel or how vulnerable we feel or how this reading's going to go, or trying to control whether or not we let the other person see that we're nervous or we're scared. Like all of these things that we try to control that pulls the door shut is what, in your analogy, puts us out of rhythm with the other two dancers. Because, you know, the a lot of the time, not always, the sitter can turn up with funky energy. Sitters turn up with funky energy all the time.
Yeah.
But most of the time, there's a base level of trust and vulnerability and need that makes their door somewhat open, that you can do a good enough reading that satisfies them. And then the spirit world's the spirit world. I mean, if they're there and they're willing, then their door's open. Sometimes they're not there. That's a different, you know, story. That's a different conversation. But with us, the medium, you know, it's that fear of just allowing the door to sit open and just letting the energy flow and just let it be what it is, and to not feel that we have to tighten the screws or mess with the lock or maybe paint it a different colour or maybe close it a little bit, you know, just messing with it all the time.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it goes back to just being in that state of allowing and being curious and seeing what's there rather than feeling that you have any role whatsoever to play in controlling anything that happens.
Yeah, I was just going to ask about the other two doors because
yeah,
we can't control spirit and we can't control the sitter. We can only control our door, and we shouldn't be controlling that.
Exactly. There's actually no control. Control. Oof. See you later. Yeah.
The one thing you can control is training yourself to not need to control.
Yeah, there you go.
What's your favorite way to do that? Is that meditation or self-inquiry, or how do you?
My favorite way to do that is to have an alignment practice with enthusiasm.
Oh, that's so good. An alignment practice with enthusiasm. Okay, tell us more. Tell us more.
I try to do things that I'm enthusiastic about every day. And I try to be enthusiastic about the things that I do every day, because enthusiasm literally means to be filled up by God. Yeah. And I find that that is the energy at which mediumship occurs and which spirit is on. And even if things are hard, even if things are imperfect, even if there's things going on that are sad-making and angry-making, if you can have an undercurrent of, overall, I'd say I'm an enthusiastic person, or I'm willing to be, or I know how to reach for that emotion, even if something's difficult, then I feel that that stands me personally in very good stead for working with spirit. You know, it can be something so small, like there's out of my window here, I'm in an apartment on the third floor, and there's two fat squirrels that fight and wrestle in the tree outside my apartment. And I just go and look at them and I laugh and I smile and I'm like enthusiastic for them. And I see them just eating their little snacks and rushing around the branches, and I'm admiring the anti-gravity, you know, climbing that they can do and how they can be kind of like wrestling with each other, or maybe they're doing something else, I don't know, but wrestling with each other and like not falling out the tree. So I'm just enthusiastic about the things that I see. And I think that that is where my mediumship comes from. For other people, it might be discipline, it might be meditation, it might be, you know, various different ways of approaching it. And I think it has to do with your personality and figuring out your own personality and what makes you feel closest to spirit and most open, because that's the feeling, again, we're going for, is that openness. And for me, it really is wonder. It's awe. Wonder, it's feeling enthusiastic.
Yeah.
That's so crazy.
Getting back to the wonder and awe. Yeah.
Exactly. Sarah said that exact phrase. We just put out a podcast today, and that was sort of the whole culmination of our conversation was comes to wonder and awe. So it's pretty neat that you just said as much. I'm feeling both wonder and awe about that.
And enthusiasm, joy. I mean, like
This is a practice that I've been doing with sort of the like quote unquote annoying stuff of life. Like I'm like, I'm going to be enthusiastic about these dishes and then I'm get the exact right soap that smells really good. And then I'm like cheerful about my, you know, so I think that's totally. It. Like you can just like tilt that filter. Like, okay, how can you approach a particular moment differently or bring, you know, bring yourself to it and knowing that you're all the while training for your mediumship. That's pretty rad.
Exactly.
Dishes make you a good medium. That's what I'm
dishes
saying.
Do make you a good medium. But don't forget about the things that you genuinely feel enthusiastic about rather than the things that you're encouraging yourself to feel enthusiastic about, because they are harder work. And one thing that mediums and also women and also mothers tend to neglect is actually prioritizing the things that contain genuine enthusiasm for them, you know, whatever that may be. Reading quietly on your own, you know, for me, I love horses and I love travel and I love swimming and I love beautiful things for my home. So I try to allow myself to also have the things that evoke genuine enthusiasm rather than always setting myself the task of finding enthusiasm.
Right.
It's like sometimes we can tend too much to giving ourselves that hard work rather than being like what would feel really rewarding and enthusiasm inducing for me right now.
Smart.
So just don't forget about that question.
Yes, thank you for that. And sometimes it's hard to even come up with what that list would be, because often a lot of us are so busy, kind of like you said, maybe it's a little bit square peg round hole of like, the dishes are awesome. No, they're kind of boring. No, I don't actually like them, but I have a way to make them okay. So thank you for that. That's a really good note. Really important.
Enthusiasm neglect is an epidemic right now. It's horrible.
Yeah.
People are not happy with, you know, they're not waking up and jumping out of bed enthusiastic about what they're doing. You know, a lot of people are detached from that feeling within themselves because of the belief that they have about what life requires of them. And, you know, again, it goes back to, I believe that enthusiasm is important for a really successful mediumship, but I also feel it's important for a really successful life and any other undertaking that a person might want to engage with. And so I think it's a very underdeveloped muscle that will take some practice to be like, okay, am I more enthusiastic about this apple or this apple in the grocery store, you know, and take it from there.
Love that.
Yeah. That's what we're here for. That's why we're in these human bodies, to experience that joy, that enthusiasm for being here. Yeah. And also you've got a little tiny girl and you got another little boy on the way. There's nothing like being in the present moment with those little kids and seeing the world through their eyes, because a lot of it is for the first time and they're exploring and they're looking at things and they're experiencing life with their little joy.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. No one told me how hilarious motherhood was going to be. my daughter is laugh out loud funny on a daily basis. Me and our dad just look at each other across the, you know, the breakfast table, just howling with laughter at the things she says and does. So definitely she's a source of a great deal of enthusiasm in my life, and being enthusiastic herself about the world, you know, there's a lot that I can learn from her as well.
So here's a kind of a fun question I want to ask you. So you're an amazing medium. You do all these readings, but what kind of like psychic hits do you get? Like, did you know your husband when you first met him? Like that, like, did you get a sense of your daughter before she arrived? Like any of that stuff?
Oh my God. So much of that stuff.
The stories
are literally crazy. And my husband is a massive skeptic, or at least he was when we first met. And now he's just like, what is happening?
His mind is
totally blown. So, okay, let me just start with this one. So we got engaged to be married. And then we didn't have any kids. We were engaged to be married. We were planning our wedding. And I went to bed this one night and I had this crazy dream. It was so real and it was so vivid. And I dreamt that at our wedding, we announced that we were pregnant and that we were having a baby girl, and we put the scan up on the on the screen of the wedding when he was giving his speech, and that there was this yellow writing, that was these balloons of the yellow writing, like announcing that our baby was due. And so it was only like, I think our wedding was about 4 months away or something. And so I said to my husband, I was like, Corbin, I had this insane dream, and I told him all about it. And I was like, so then this happened, and you did this speech, and we were having a baby. We announced it at the wedding. And he was like, listen, that's not going to happen, because you would need to be pregnant next month or something for us to be able to announce the baby at the wedding. And I don't want to be too personal when I say this, but it was not super likely that we were going to be falling pregnant at that time. I had a root canal, and he was sick with the flu that month. And yet I fell pregnant before we got married, and we announced our pregnancy at our wedding.
Oh my gosh, that's so cool.
Exactly the way I dreamt it. So it was the bubble writing, the scan up on the screen, everything was exactly the way I dreamt it. And he was like, you freaked me out. Now he's kind of used to it. Yeah. And literally my vantage point of where I sat at my wedding was exactly the vantage point of like how this played out in my dream. It was just bizarre. So yeah, that happens a lot.
And did you feel like you were able to communicate with your son now, or your daughter before she showed up on the earth?
Not really, honestly. Just normal maternal communication. I always wanted to have children, but I don't want to necessarily say too much, but I had a lot of parental disconnect in my own childhood from my parents. And so I had a lot of difficulties settling into pure desire, pure want, pure acceptance without the fear about how I would be as a mother, and the fear of choosing the wrong partner, and the fear of messing them up, basically, you know, all of this sort of stuff. Yeah. So I felt it was something that I surrendered and handed over to God and said, look, if this isn't part of my path, I need you to take care of it, because I can't do the me taking care of this thing with this subject, because I just don't have the data points. I don't have the healthy relationship to look at, and the healthy parental relationships to look at, to say, oh my God, that's what I want. Yes. But I know in my heart of hearts, I do want it. So I think I was a little bit blocked from exploring that too much, but I was willing to sort of just ride the river rapids of life. And if it was one of the, you know, bends and twists that we took, then great. And it ended up being. So I didn't feel a very strong connection to my children before I fell pregnant. I did know that I was going to have a daughter and a son, but that's sort of as far as it went.
Yeah,
I did get that feeling really strongly, and that's the way it's ended
that's been
up.
Accurate, yeah.
But it was very close to when I actually fell pregnant and met my husband and everything. Prior to that, I didn't really think about it much at all, because of counter currents, shall we say.
I like that. That's well said.
So is your husband a believer now?
He is now. Yeah, he is now. And I think the moment that made him a believer, I was standing in the kitchen one day, and he loves The Office, like the American version of the show The Office. He loves it. And I had never seen it. And he was like, we have to start watching it. Like, we're going to binge watch it. It's going to be great. You're going to love it. And I was like, cool. And I was standing in the kitchen one day, and I just started laughing. And he was like, what are you laughing at? And I had this memory, just this random memory came to my mind of something that happened years ago, where I was a philosophy student. So I studied philosophy at uni, and we went on a philosophy trip. And so we had to go away and stay at this cabin, and certain students gave talks. And then there was a lot of wine and beer involved in the evening, and we're playing games and stuff. And so we had to play this game where we stuck a post-it to our heads, and it had the name of a celebrity on it. And we had to ask questions to identify who the celebrity was. And so I had a post-it on my head, and I could just see who it was. No, I don't mean the writing, like in my mind's eye, because they were all staring at me. I could see in my mind who it was they were thinking of. And I just said, is it Channing Tatum? And they all looked at me like, that is, how did you know that that said Channing Tatum without asking any questions? They were all, they were all terrified. Anyway, so this memory just came to my mind out of nowhere when I was making a cup of tea of when this happened to me. And then my husband was like, what are you laughing at? So I was like, Corbin, this thing happened to me once. I just have to tell you about it. It was so funny. All my philosophy friends were like freaked out because I had a post-it on my head and I knew that it said Channing Tatum because they were beaming it like basically at my brain. And literally we sat down to watch The Office that night and they played that game in the episode of The Office. So they had the thing
that
on their head,
so
the
post-it.
And they were playing that game. So because obviously my husband loves The Office, he was like, you freaked me out. Did you know that that was going to come up in this show? So of all the things that have happened, you know, even beyond like knowing that our daughter was coming and we were going to announce it at the wedding and everything, it's when I knew before I watched the show that they were going to play that game in The Office. That's what really sold it.
I like him, honestly. TV, for me, it's about TV and movies, so I thought that would work for me. Yeah. That would be a nice, like, okay, you have something special, lady.
So we were literally lying in bed watching it, and his face, he looked at me like, because we had literally just spoken about it that morning.
And that is wild.
He just
that
couldn't get
so
his
wild.
Head around it. Yeah, he was like, what just happened? I'm like, I don't know, these things happen. What can I say?
Yeah, to you. Oh,
yeah.
That is so cool.
Yeah. Well, but we make a good team.
Oh.
Yeah.
It matters, especially this incredibly precious time. I mean, every time is precious, but with the littles, it's pretty extraordinary. So thank you for taking the time with us. Before we go, I just wanted to ask one more question. And Sarah, if you have one more burning, but as you know, our audience is made up of a lot of people who are kind of just coming online. And you've shared a lot of beautiful gems about your philosophy about mediumship and what it takes and whatnot. But I guess, is there anything that you would want to add or share about like why you love it or, you know, just encouragement for the newcomers?
The reason to explore mediumship for yourself is as much about the elevation of your own spirit as it is about the elevation of other people's. And many people who are interested in developing their mediumship have come to that path through a grief of their own. Mm-hmm. And if all they manage to do is transmute their grief into a faith that they'll see their loved ones again and that they show up in the world as somebody who has transmuted that fear and that grief and that loss into something that makes them want to be like live productively and live lovingly and live considerately of themselves and of others and of the sanctity of their existence, then that's all they need to have accomplished. It doesn't need to be spectacular reading after spectacular reading, and it doesn't even need to be about tens of thousands of people that you help or even one person that you help. If the only person that you help in your journey as a medium is yourself, then that is enough for spirit. That's enough for God or your higher power or yourself. Mediumship is a way to give yourself your life back after loss. And I think that is a really good reason to pursue it.
Yeah, I think we can end on that because that's just gorgeous. I mean, that sums it up so succinctly and so beautifully.
Yeah. Wow. Sitting with you has been a true blessing, Lauren. Your presence is very, very special. And I'm excited to read your book again.
We'll wait for the next book.
It's
going to take a little while with them. Mm-hmm. Is it in the works now?
Yes, there's a few projects in the works. Writing is something that I can manage while pregnant and being a mum, because any quiet time that I've got, I can get my phone out or sit down at my laptop. It's actually much more manageable than trying to run the sort of student side of the the thing. So anyway, yes, there's a couple of books in the works at the moment. One of them is about the arguments from a philosophical point of view of why we should believe in life after death and why we should believe that we can transcend death.
Can't wait for that one.
It's a philosophical treatise on why we should believe, essentially. And then the other one is going to be probably called Miraculous Mediumship, which is the name of my course, which will be another how-to manual, I guess, on developing your mediumship. But it's going to focus specifically on some of the things we talked about today, like emotional states and how emotional states have a vibrational equivalent, and how tending to those things within yourself is one of the top things you can do to enhance and improve your mediumship. So it's going to be very much emotion and inner state focused on developing your mediumship. Yeah, so that's two things that I'm working on right now, and some fiction as well, which is also mediumship related. So,
oh, cool! Yay!
Love. I'm buying. Busy. I'm pre-buying them. Just give me the link. I'm buying them now.
Oh, thanks.
Well, thank you again, Lauren. Really, really appreciate it. Just a blessing. And we will look forward to seeing you when your books are out or whenever you're ready to come out of the baby cave.
Thank you. Yes, I'll be in the baby cave a while, I think. Thank you so much for having me. It's been such a pleasure.
Absolute pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks so much.
Bye.
Bye.
Medium Curious is made possible
by Jane Morgan Editing.
Sarah Rathke made the amazing music.
And Gigi Hawkins, podcast consultant.
Mix by podcast engineers. Our logo was created by Eric Allen.
Kyle Hansen McKee, photography.
And the dogs under the desk in Hawaii are Kalea and Domino.
And Trixie in California.